Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, January 12th, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners meeting for the administrative workshop of the week. And so we'll get started. We've got a half agenda, I'd say. Legal counsel is going to start out with an order number 2017-002 in the matter of delegation of authority of the Josephine County Tax Collector to issue a tax refund on real and personal property in the amount of $30,000 or less. This is a holdover kind of from last year where we had two situations of tax refund. The previous policy is that anything over $10,000 comes to the board for approval, but we were seeing a couple of these from a timeliness element of having a quorum of the board to act on it, and just that this is a fairly routine element that the tax collector does, that we thought maybe we could adjust that minimum threshold, how we've made adjustments in the contracting authority of managers and other things. So.
Yeah, the statute says technically that the board will do the refunds in 1995. The $10,000 one board order was issued, and it has become, the taxes are much higher now, and it is becoming, it seems, more often that we're doing refunds, just simple overpayments, where to the property owner and a lender or somebody, even the double payment, which really is, it's very technically, it needs to go back, and go back quickly would be very easy. So just adjusting it to $30,000, and I can put in my quarterly report those that are over $10,000 so that the board has knowledge of them, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I had reached out. I'm the liaison, and I was just thinking about why would it be policy wise, state statute wise, that the board needs to do this, because she's an elected official as well, and it just actually you're elected as the treasurer, not the tax collector.
Right, and I'm appointed. But it's across the state, and everybody's structures are different. So that it is in statute that it's up to your discretion to do the refunds.
Yeah, and I wanted this in a timely fashion because we potentially pay interest on monies that we keep that we shouldn't have. Sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on whether or not we can get it back under, but there's a duration of time.
Well, it depends on the characteristics of the refund.
Okay.
If it's a rule correction, then we have to pay them interest, and it's 1% a month. And if we have to hold this over, I think the last time I figured it would be the cost of $200 between the 15th and the 16th. And if I can get it out as quickly as possible.
And if she has to wait for a board meeting to make that adjustment as opposed to doing it.
Drop it out to almost 10 days more. So.
How many of these are you talking about?
Not very many, but over 10,000, very, very few.
Right. But this year it seems like my refunds have been well over $10,000, not just right over the threshold.
Like 20, 30.
Yeah.
So if we move that to 30,
that should.
How many do you have over 30? Do you ever get them over 30?
No. The highest one was 21,000 just last December, mm-hmm. I think. November or December. It was about 20-some-odd thousand. That's the highest I've ever seen since I've worked here.
So this accident covered virtually
everything. It should cover everything. And it's, you know.
So Wally and I talked about the idea, Councillor Hicks, of getting notification to the board, at least the liaison, so that somebody knows, if there's a call that comes in and says, you know, from a district standpoint, we're not just refunding our money. In fact, most of the time it's 7.9 or 8.3% is our money. Most of it's somebody else's money. But we are responsible for the interest if there's a role correction. And so our diligence is to get it out as soon as possible. And I've never had a district question, but I have had constituents call and say, what was this? How does the county have enough money that they're just giving back taxes, or how do I get that, or something like that? And I said, no, these are the situations where this is it's built into your mortgage or something, and somebody paid it or whatever, and it's duplicative. We're not giving away money here. So just to be in the loop on that, I think makes a lot of sense. So the quarterly report, I would suggest that everything over $10,000 be itemized, mm-hmm. as far as those returns, and I think that suffices. We'll get a chance to see it.
Does that require just a ratification thing where all three of us say we?
We'll move this policy forward to the WBS for official approval of that order. So we just, right now in our process, we review everything that goes to the weekly business session, ideally at the admin meeting before it moves to the weekly business session. And here we decide whether or not it's on an administrative calendar or a consent. This is a change in policy. This is an administrative element. Consent calendar is made up of anything that's budgeted or isn't a change in policy. So it's pretty easy to go forward, and you'll get the hang of it. But I think that this is a good idea. It's a good solution administratively.
Merit in it.
Okay. So we'll move it forward. Thank you, Eve, and I'll be there to talk to it.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Definitely. Morning, Lily.
Hi.
Commissioner Morgan. Item B is intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Judicial Department of fiber optic cable to be installed between Justice Building and Ann Basker Auditoriums. So we've got Mr. Rust here from Courts.
And John.
And John McCafferty from IT. Pull up a chair.
Okay, so the IGA was actually presented to us by the Judicial Department, and we did a few back and forths involving our IT department also, but it's probably best, especially since we have some fresh ears, if we could get directly from the one who knows the most, Kirk, who I've asked to join us today, a little bit of background on what's happening with this.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning,
Commissioner. Feel free to start kind of talking about broad strokes about where you get this money, how it's used, and then this is an appropriate use and all that. Start from the beginning if you could.
Absolutely. Well, good morning, Commissioners. 2 years ago, the Oregon Judicial Department was in the process of rolling out eCourt. Our court went live December of 2014, and that basically made our court somewhat paperless, or paper on demand. The last component of our e-court system is the jury management module. As you know, the court holds jury orientation on Tuesdays over at the Ann Basker Auditorium. In order for us to fully utilize our Odyssey jury management system, we need connectivity to our server. So the best way to do that is through fiber optic connection from our server here in the courthouse over to the Ambassador Auditorium. The cost for that is a little over $7,000 just for the installation of the fiber optic cable. That money is available to us through our Jury Improvement Fund. The Jury Improvement Fund is created by donations of jurors. So when a juror does their jury service, they have the option to donate their $10 or $20 and or plus their mileage. So every year we get that money back to Josephine County to use specifically for jury-related improvements. So we feel very strongly that this is a very appropriate use of our jury improvement funds. However, it does pretty much use the entire fund that we have available to do that. So additionally, there'll be some work at the Ann Basker Auditorium with some hardware that's on the state. We will take care of that. The benefit to us is that we'll have a fully functioning computerized jury management system. And additionally, the side benefits of the county is that you would also be able to share in that fiber optic line.
So I understand there are 12 pair strands or whatever, and we get access to three. We really don't use the Ann Basker for high technical, you know, pretty much just a meeting space occasionally for. Will that satisfy most of the needs?
Yeah, one pair is all we need. Two pairs is always good for redundancy.
Okay.
And a third is if we have development.
Okay.
Right now we have a twisted pair Ethernet cable from the City of Grants Pass that they were nice enough to let us have years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's on what are called media converters that fail. They cost about $800,000 on either end. There's two of them. They can fail, so those costs could be out there. We could have interrupted service. Fiber has been a project for quite a while. We just got parks, fairgrounds, and forestry on fiber. Emergency services out at SAR is on fiber. So we try to get every connection we have on fiber.
Would it improve our screening for our meetings?
Probably not. Charter has fiber that comes straight in. And our streaming is actually greatly improved on the YouTube version, and there haven't been any issues.
That's what I've heard. People are really happy with that.
It's much better quality.
Yeah. Great. So there's an IGA. We accept the maintenance liability on the other side once it's installed. And so is that something you're comfortable
with? $50 a month. We already have a contract with Hunter, so it made sense for us to keep that part of it going. And it's for 10 years, I believe. So our total out cost is $6,000 over those 10 years.
Okay. Is that a peg that could probably be rolled into because it's a capital? Or, yeah, I don't think it's considered an operations.
You can do it. I think you could do it in peg. I think the contract would accommodate that.
I would think so.
Yeah, I think great. Just do it.
PEG is the public education government funds that are, and we just settled a 10-year contract with them. And there are some revenues there. They're diminished from what they were historically, but their revenues are diminished as well. So,
it's a very restricted what you can spend on.
It is. It's very restricted. This feels like it's qualified, and so that'd be really, really great.
Yeah, I think they roll that in.
Something. I've also chatted with Ryan really quickly. He's peripherally connected to this, and so he endorses Hunter Sounds Good, the IGA. I said it looks good to me. Sounds fine. So we can move this forward in a timely fashion next week if that's okay. Sounds good. So this is an administrative element and we'll move it forward. I think I can be there as the PEG or IT liaison. You don't need to make a special appointment there. We'll figure out a way to cover it. It's pretty simple. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
So item number 1C is Land and Water Conservation Fund local agreement for Lake Selmec restrooms and footbridge.
Okay, and we have a parade of special guest stars this morning in admin. So Sarah is joining us from Parks, and she's got kind of a, well, probably a good back, if you could present some background, please, for everybody's benefit.
Yeah, no problem. So Lake Selmec is the only vertical lake in Josephine County. It was dreamed up by a couple of men in 1958, christened in 1961, and since then it's been used as a bass. It is deemed a bass trophy lake. It's used for hiking, fishing, swimming, all sorts of recreation. We have a total of 5 different campgrounds, or loops, should I say, sprinkled around the lake. We're just getting used to it.
Good. Wandered up.
There you go.
Okay. Good stuff. So okay.
It's been quite an adventure out there this last year with the upgrade.
Yeah, there's a lot going on out of the lake. Public Works has their project that does move the bridge that actually crosses over the lake that ties into the spillway. That is a separate project from what we're talking about. But with this project specifically, we have a lot of old infrastructure since 61 to 67 was really the time that we were building the lake and all of the facilities. So at this time we have a pedestrian footbridge. It's pretty close to the Lake Selmec Resort. It's in the area of our Eagle Loop that ties into the Davis area. And there's a footbridge there, and it has deteriorated past use. About a year and a half ago, my park rangers went ahead and took off the walking boards because it was becoming a danger for use. So it's closed at this time. So this project will rebuild that pedestrian bridge itself. We are also going to tear down 6 wooden vault toilets and replace them with 4 concrete double toilet ADA facilities. Our wooden ones right now have holes in them. They are rotting from the core. It's always the next storm that we wonder if some of them are going to be blowing over. So we've estimated the project at about $151,000. And today we are discussing signing a federal grant agreement that came in at $75,500. The rest of the project is funded. We have $5,000 from the Four-Way Foundation. The previous board had approved $50,000 in economic development funds, and then the rest of the estimated $20,000 will come out of the park's budget. Any questions about the Lake Little project?
When will the project potentially be completed?
The federal agreement states that it has to be completed by June 2017, and we are on track to have that happen.
Okay. So we approved $50,000 out of economic development?
Yes.
That sounds like a lot. Mm-hmm. I'd love to find some other place and have that money. I feel like economic development for parks even would be better spent if it were like on marketing or something. I'd rather spend $50,000 out of economic development for that, for parks, than for infrastructure. I'm not saying that we're not going to fund this, because I think we've made a commitment to do that, but if I could work with Arthur and some other people to figure out, you know, maybe not that $50,000, I'd even see it coming out of maybe like a property reserve or something like that, not necessarily even yours. That seems the better way to spend that money. I'm sorry, I'm just...
No, it's okay. That's the one thing that was bugging me is the economic development piece of it. Because, to me, we have to be very intentional with what planning is we're moving forward.
And we have a new director, and I spoke with her yesterday about her goals for the remainder of the 2017, which is half of a budget year, but your job is to come up with a budget for economic development and figure out the best way to spend that. And in my opinion, everything's on the table because, if you've got a bang for the buck that sells, then I want to hear about it. So I think I'm prepared to say, let's move this forward. We can move the money, the $50,000 afterward, or figure out a way to do that in the interim. I don't want to hold this up for that, but if the board will indulge that we work on that to figure out, is that the best place to get it from?
Yeah. And if we're able to do more in-house or save money along the way or find another funding source, such as getting a sponsor for each of the toilets and putting up a sponsor plaque and tying that in, that's something we can start to do.
And so you're saved, care of.
Well, it's a captive audience. It's not a joke that you see that.
And Lake Salmac really is a destination. Again, it's the only lake within an hour drive where you can actually get your boat in. So it's really valued by the area.
Okay. Anything else? Sounds really good, Sarah. Thank you, Ms. Moy.
The project to me.
That's right. Sarah Moy was our HR director from 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, it hits them like...
Right? This is the second. That's right. Okay. And the next one, Schroeder Park Service and Annexation Agreement with the City of Granite Pass.
Oh, my.
Yep, this has been in the works for probably close to a year, and not because of anything that Sarah has neglected by any means from my perspective. Anyway, so we are approaching a point of a decision that the board may need to make, and probably maybe we can get some background on this one too, so that we can get caught up.
Okay. It was midsummer, so it has been about 7 or 8 months, just to give you the timeline, but the first 11 sites on the right hand of Schroeder when you first pull in, we had the leach field back up during the summer, and it affected first 3 of the sites, and because of old schematics and not being able to tell, we continued to use some of the other sites. Again, we have septic backup. So our leach field essentially failed in the middle of summer. So since then, we've been just using them as a lower-end site where you can't hook up sewer, and this project has been in the works since then. So part of this is because of the proximity to urban growth boundary with the city, and I did look it up, the properties to the south of us are urban growth boundary, and then the properties to the east of us are city. So because of our proximity, DEQ will not allow us to rebuild a leach field. We essentially have to tie into the city sewer. So with that, it becomes a pretty big project. And that's where this agreement comes in order for us to tie into their main sewer line that runs down Schroeder Lane. This agreement has to be signed. And along with that, we've just paid about $32,000 in SDC funds, which was granted and covered by the Solid Waste Agency.
So this is a project we've been working on, like Sarah Ms. Wright said, for a couple of months, and I think it makes a lot of sense. It seems like a little bit of a stretch for the solid waste funds to be used. We're the charter organization for that, but we have two representatives on it. I'm okay with it. They're sitting on plenty of reserve for it, and it's a good, worthy cause. The one thing that I think we have angst about is the service and annexation agreement. But everybody signs that when you sign up for a city service. We do that with every industrial park in every industrial user of water in the industrial parks. In all of our lifetimes, the city will be out there. We just approved a 30-year plan with a reserve, 20-year urban growth boundary, 10-year reserve, and it's not even close. You know, that A and B element that we included as employment lands out there is kind of a stretch and a little arm, and it still is a half a mile as a crow flies from the industrial park. If you'll remember, I think, Lily, were you on the council during the urban growth boundaries? So you'll remember that there was significant pushback from the people that lived along the river about including them in that area. They're not even in the 10-year reserve. They're not even anywhere close. So I have no hesitation in signing up. If you're going to sign up for city services, you have to sign this service and annexation agreement. But it won't be an issue for us, I believe, in our lifetime. And down the road, in 30, 40 years, somebody else can figure that out. So I don't have any hesitation about signing up at all.
Repairing this current septic system, which you're not allowed to do, would be expensive. But you're going to have a sewer. You're going to have a sewer charge from the city monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Did they mention how much that was going to be?
The rest of our park is already on city sewer, so this is the last phase that has not occurred. We have two bills that we pay on a monthly basis. I believe one of them is in the range of $180, and the other one's $130. I imagine it's going to be real close to $150, although we have not had that discussion about what the monthly bill will be. But for us, that'll be a great thing, so we don't have to worry about this leach field, and they can have the sewer.
Well, the liability is just...
Yeah, and we're not just putting the leach field in for giving access to the 11 spots or whatever. I mean,
yes.
The plan is to provide greater RV opportunities there.
Sure.
So as the costs increase, the revenues should keep pace with that. I don't know that we're just going to be paying for, non-use. It'll be relative to, your water and sewer use. So
Schroeder Park's our third busiest in our camping system. We have about 3,300 camping nights a year. Most of that in summer.
Do you have city water out there? You're on city water now or just sewer?
No, we have water.
Just sewer, okay.
I'll just add one more point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we did some research as to whether a county park contained within city limits then becomes a city park. And I spoke to Laura Glover, and we haven't found any authority one way or the other, but our opinion in our office and that of Laura, not that I'm her spokesman, but is that annexation into a city does not automatically render a county park a city park. So you're going to retain ownership of the park, even if it were annexed.
And I would assume that would be a similar thing if we were to designate the fairgrounds as a park. They're not going to get it. It doesn't just happen that way.
That's a good comparison.
So,
right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And the same thing for, the city owns that property out there. If they were to designate it a park, they'd not develop it as a park. That's up to the county. But it wouldn't necessarily just come to the county at that point.
Yes.
Or we'd be all in favor of them. So yeah, that sounds good, but glad we checked that box.
Yes.
This is also an administrative element, so I think we should move it forward if that's okay. And yeah.
Is the camping area suffice with travel around? I mean, like I've been at White Horse and it's horrible for RV parking. So is Schroeder up to where it needs to be? So as you're doing these sewer upgrades and you're maybe tearing things up to bring in plumbing, is there any other projects that can be coupled with it to make sure you're where you need to be?
At this time, we're going to be lifting out the 4-inch sewer line and replacing it with a 6-inch, and that goes on the back end of the RV spot. So at this time, you should not be cutting into the main driveway unless we have a change of plans with the contractor chosen to perform the work. But as far as an RV navigating through the entire park and the roads, it's good. The only thing that we have to repair the roads on my plate at this time is we do in some other sections have tree roots that have pushed up the concrete, making some good bumpy sections in there. So that is on our list to eventually replace. But other than that, Schroeder really doesn't need a lot of improvement. There's a lot of opportunity in the area, but everything else is pretty good. The rest are starting to work.
Good.
Okay. Sarah, if you don't mind, I think it'd be best if you came and spoke about these. Not that I couldn't, but you've got two of them. Appreciating your travel time over two issues, that'd be really great.
Okay.
Great. If you can't, just let me know.
Okay. No, that's on my calendar.
Great. Anything else for legal, from the board? Do you mind if you put that on the agenda? We put that on the agenda as another element under legal. You guys run so much stuff.
Yes.
I just think that'd be much, it'd be delineated on there that we can talk about other things administratively. I'm always going to bring up the codification.
You want another agenda item?
Just or other.
Other, okay. Okay.
We have matters from commissioners as an other style at the bottom of the agenda, so if there's something that didn't make it on here, it's a personal whatever you want to bring up, I've got a number of different things. That's what we would have that on the legal section. They're pretty much here every admin meeting because, like I said, they touch pretty much everything. So,
if Do we need to bring it here for you before I email you with something that's coming up, or start with you the other way?
Not as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I guess okay. It's a board preference.
Yeah. I still have kind of a carryover project that I was working on with the CGC that it's time that I get you involved.
Yeah.
So.
Sure.
Do you guys know how the admin calendar's brought together? So throughout the week, managers' issues that are brought before the board are assembled and published, and we circulate that a couple of days before, maybe like Monday, Tuesday?
Deadline is Monday.
Deadline's Monday for being officially on the admin calendar, and so there's a chance to review it, and yeah, that's what you want to talk about. And then stuff that needs decisions by the board goes over to the ambassador 6 days, 7 days later. 6 days later, and done at the weekly business session. So, but feel free, you know, to reach out to legal and say, hey, I've got this question about this thing. When you get the admin calendar and you've reviewed it before this meeting, that's the best time to do it. And if you have questions, feel free for clarifications. You don't have to ask them here or of any other manager kind of stuff. Sarah says, well, what is this annexation thing? I don't think that's a good idea. And you can talk to her, you know, feel comfortable doing it here. Whatever you want to do, so or hold it over. If there's something on this that's like, man, I'm just not comfortable with this yet, that's good to know too. We'll just either address it here or we'll hold it over for a later decision. So it's pretty, unless there's a time constraint on it. But that codification is the one that I'm really interested in trying to put that one to bed ASAP.
Yes, yes.
And I know you are too. So
what
there's
do?
There's things that Ms. Schmelzer and I were talking about yesterday in our meeting that we'd really like to have. And I'm interested in also knowing about the process of codification.
Sure.
I was under the impression when we started this project 6 years ago that I just get this document, and it is a book, and it's all codified. All the code's there, and it's referenced, and it's... But I've come to learn that's not exactly the case. Do you want to describe that a little bit about what we have to do?
Sure. Okay. Maybe I'll start sort of at the end of the story. What we're aiming at is having something that would be comparable to what the state has. You have the Oregon Revised Statutes, and it's a very organized way of describing the laws of the state of Oregon. The codification, similarly, is a very organized way of describing the laws of the county. That currently is something that we don't have. There's not a book you can pull off of the shelf or a website you can go to that you just sort of click on a topic and find out what the laws are pertaining to that particular area. Rural Land Development Code,
better.
More or less better, yeah. But even that I wouldn't characterize as being a code in any real sense. You kind of have to click around on that too to find some of the amendments. Anyway, so the process is that we go back as far as the records allow and find out what the laws are that govern this jurisdiction. And when we can establish that, and that does involve, yes, looking through old microfiche and records contained in the clerk's office and, just grunting it out in terms of personnel hours.
But we hired a contractor to kind of, but there's a lot of work that goes to just preparing the contractor for the job.
Yes.
It's not something that somebody can just come in and, oh, don't worry about it, I'll do it. No, we're not going to let you just go into the file room, that storage or blah, blah, blah. They have to, it's a lot of work.
So it sounds like it.
It's a lot of work.
That's why boards haven't done it, and that may be why it's taken quite a while to do it.
But it's not stagnating. It's not. It's still moving.
It's still moving. I can bring it in if you want. I can come in next
There's
week.
A draft.
With,
it's like we're in the
yes.
home stretch. Okay.
Yeah, we're in the home stretch. There's
the
a
home
few. Stretch
there's a hard part. I think
we have a draft, but when they sent us the draft, they also sent us like 8 pages in which raised a very, very detailed technical. Questions, like just very detailed questions about different parts of the ordinances. And so those need to be answered, and it's pretty complex and pretty time consuming. I took a quick look at the code, and I think the draft is good, but there are some things that we're making comments on. For example, some of the titles I think could cause confusion, so we're recommending changes on those. There are some things that are in the code that I don't think they're ordinances, I think they're resolutions, so we have to go back and check, you know, why is that in there, why did they put that in there? And when you have a document of 50 years plus of ordinances that have been enacted and you're going through them all, it is very time consuming. Mm-hmm. Very time consuming, very detailed and tedious.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things we found, is you basically can't work on this longer than about 4 hours at a time. You can't just say, well, brain spend tomorrow working on the...
Uh-huh. Well, it'll be too long.
It makes your brain soggy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, 4 is kind of the outside of... what's humanly possible.
Right.
Anyway, but yeah, so we've, you know, I've managed it. We've tried to send people off site when possible for
there
focus time.
There was a time frame of 90 days in the contract after they gave us a draft to put, like, our bow on it.
Yes.
Is that extendable, or are we past that time frame?
That didn't really apply to us.
Oh,
yeah, they said it did.
That's a really interesting
found out.
Other
no,
than,
it didn't.
Okay.
Yes. Unfortunately, we've gone past the 90 days.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can bring in the questions if you'd like to see them.
Anybody knew that they were contracting with, but our contract was, they're newer contracts with this company who contain that clause, but ours did not.
Okay. Great. There's understanding that workload that legal has, there's a number of projects that are kind of in the queue in your guys' office. And so I think from my standpoint, when for new board members, understanding that you know, when you just ask legal to go do something, it's kind of like a ball. You can't just keep putting things in. If you put more in, there's something that comes out. A ball's a terrible analogy, but there's some analogy where can't just keep asking and stuff. The previous board had a tendency to, in my opinion, sometimes just ask things that were like, we're not doing that. I don't know why you asked legal, you know, my opinion. And I think if the board were approached with the idea of, can you investigate, I don't have a very good example, but there have been a couple, and it's like, I don't know why you're asking them to do that, because the board isn't going to be receptive to that.
Do we need to maybe get an update on what the queue stuff is and try to see if there's priorities that we haven't, or is that up to legal to decide priorities?
Well, he's an elected official, so but we appropriate the funds. So there's a balancing act between, you know, our oversight and saying, I wanted this done yesterday. The board says we want this done yesterday. I feel like that has some merit. But he has all these managers that are waiting on things too, and so if we don't know the full scope of, well, by us saying the codification is our number one goal, well, then you're not going to get a contract for the IGA for the new camera system in the jail, or you know what I mean? It's like, well, wait a second, that's a priority. You know, you find yourself bumping up against other things. So it's a balancing act. I have, with all respect, I've always asked for his predecessor and Councillor Hicks. Of let me help you, or let the liaison at least try to help prioritize these things on behalf of the board, because I do see things that come out of legal that are, but that isn't a priority in my opinion. Of course, my opinion isn't the only one that matters, but that's not always my opinion. But yeah, anyway, so we got to work on that.
But I think we should finish something.
I think there's room for
improvement. You get so many things going at one time, you're not going to get any of them done on time. So, you know, if this complication is something that we need to get finished, get it done with.
There are things, there's direction that I think the board can give to legal that I would like to see, and we have done this, more of those things that are routine elements. I'll use Air Force. Their leases are, they're all very similar, and there's a certain element of discretion to the airport manager, but the delay of time of having to review each one as though they're individual and if there's a boilerplate element to any department's routine kind of elements, I would really like to see that, and or tell me why it can't happen. You know, the giving more discretion to the offices on the low potential liability types of actions, that's something that I'd like to see explored. So if you make everything have to run through legal, it makes it, well, then there's going to be a bottleneck, because there's no more money to appropriate to legal. That is, in my opinion, since I've been here, there's the highest level of staffing in that office right now than there ever has been.
Yes.
And that was frankly, a priority of mine to say, much like the DA's office, out of the criminal justice system, you fund the bottleneck. You fund the bottleneck. Try to figure out a way to make that better and stuff. So it's going to be one of those things I think we work on over time. But I think that there's an opportunity, in my opinion, for the board to engage on those priorities. And so there is a little bit of a different dynamic with legal being an elected, but also in every other county, maybe in the nation, has more of an administrative ISF function, kind of like finance, HR within the board. So it's a balancing act. Wally does a good job. It's fun. And it's not going to end anytime soon. This is the formula we have. So
you said fun. I didn't see any head nods.
Nobody. Hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, this is a blast.
I'm going to have fun with it. You know, whatever. It's going to be here after I'm gone, and just the same way. So that's it. I think if you could provide a timeline on the codification, you know, we have 8 pages of review. There's 4 left. Probably the 4 hard pages. You know what I mean? I think, you know, we had a goal of the end of the year, and if it's the goal of the end of 17, I just want to know. It's in my work plan to start implementing a codified code, and I can't do that until the code's codified. So I would like to know when it's done, or anything we can do to help. That'd be great. Thank you very much. If there's nothing else, okay. We'll move on to Department Business. Sheriff's Office has a report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to Ordinance 2014-003.
Is it auction time?
Carrie
Lee.
Happy New Year, Carrie.
Happy New Year.
Good to see you. She's cleaning house.
I am cleaning house. My house is clean.
Whoa.
Ouch.
Les Schwab. No,
my warehouse. I just stepped wrong and it poked me. Yes, we have another list, and you'll notice with this list. You have a garbage can?
Yeah.
Very good in my shoe. With this list, you'll notice that many of the items, it says pallet of tools. Pallet of household. This is all from the HARP case, in which we started with 49 pallets and we're down to about 23 recovered stolen property that we can't find the owners to. I have turned over as many rocks as I can to find the owners. We've done press releases and I just can't find them. So it is what it is, and it's clogging my warehouse way too much. So you know, my first step is to get your approval to go through it, and just as a background fee. In times past, I've only come to the board like once a year when I had an auction list, and I was required by statute, by ordinance, to be at those auctions. And they're very time consuming. So we changed the ordinance in 2014, in which I can do online auctions. We can do auctions here. We can donate to nonprofits. And it gives us some other things, but I don't have to personally attend auctions. So I'm coming to the board more frequently to alleviate me going through items twice. Because a backpack is a backpack, but in that backpack it could have valuables. And I don't want to go through it and say, okay, this is an auctionable. I want to pull it once, look at it, determine its value, and make the best call for the county, and either dispose of it or put it in a pile to sell or whatever we're going to do with it. So that's why you'll see a lot of things on the list that appear to have potentially very small value but could potentially have very large value. So backpacks are a surprise every time.
I see on your list, is this value over here, is that what you think they're worth, or?
Yes.
In the right-hand column?
Yes. Okay. I've been doing this I've been with the county 20 years now, and I've been doing property and evidence for 18 and a half of those years.
And it's just volume. Sure, volume says now's the time to pull the trigger on another auction or Liquidation of my...
There has been a constant... I saw evidence going back to the 80s because of the volume that we had and the lack of people getting rid of it in the past. And also the amount of research needed to determine, is the case adjudicated? Can I really even get rid of this stuff? As an example, I have a 97 case that had 5 suspects. All of them...
5 what?
Suspects.
Oh, okay.
We didn't actually... And I found out through this research, I ran into a warrant out of Maryland that was like just a couple days off on 3 of the suspects. I'm like, is that ours? Is that ours? Turned out it was, and it went federal. But I didn't have any record of it in our system because I wasn't there when the case came in. Long story short, we finally got the case adjudicated like a year ago. That case alone has 140 guns.
That was a huge one.
It was huge.
Yeah, I remember she went over the
huge
guns. Mm-hmm.
Huge. So the amount of research you have to do, especially the older the cases, the more difficult the research, obviously. It's on the paperwork.
There's no liability, say, for instance, the case you just auctioned off all the 140 guns, and then all of a sudden the feds come by and say, hey, we need some evidence out of that.
No,
I
get authorization from Doug Fong.
So you get you're signed off, and then so they can't come back on the county and say, no, we wanted you to keep this stuff for perpetuity.
Yeah, and sometimes that takes me a little, especially with federal cases, it might take me a little bit longer to get that authorization from Mr. Fong. But I will not proceed until I have, period.
There's some long-term goals that we have with evidence that I don't think we necessarily need to get into today, but I think we will explore in the goal-setting sessions and stuff. You're the liaison to the sheriffs.
Yeah.
You would be the liaison to this. Have you been out there yet?
No,
probably
not.
I haven't either.
My shop's right up above the hill from you.
That's probably the last
corner
thing I haven't seen. But she's
amazing.
She's been inviting me for a long time.
I have.
I may never go. I may want to just see the new facility that we're going to hopefully do.
Why would you like that? I don't want to move. That's why I got to get rid of this stuff. I want to.
You need to. She's doing what we've asked and getting it cleaned up and down to a manageable, if it's possible, level. Because at some point we are going to have to...
Is this out on the end street?
Mm-hmm.
The end of
the ugly blue-green building with all of that car stuff.
What happens to, like, there's an old logging truck there that went off the bank out there. Is that still just used as evidence, or you just can't get rid of it?
The logging truck is gone now.
Okay. Or there's a water truck or something?
Yeah, the water truck. Well, I had a logging truck, too. Yeah, the water truck is gone. That's gone. Turned into a civil case.
There's a lawsuit pending.
Yeah.
My
obligation to hold on
is
gone.
Okay.
So it went away because it was...
They take it wherever they need to keep it.
I don't know where it went, actually. This one I don't have it anymore. Which is... Oh, wait, no, I do. I crushed it. That's right. There wasn't much left of it.
I think in my long-term goal, it'd be to divest the county of that property. If there's a better and higher use for it in that area, for sure. And I think we can consolidate her function to a better footprint for the county, a better spot that works better for everybody. So we're going to be working on that.
Would that new location probably be about the county where it's not right on the city street somewhere?
It my proposal would probably be on the campus of the jail. And so it would be housed right there with officers, very secure.
That would be ideal.
Yeah. We've got some spots picked out, so I'd love to have Ryan show you around kind of what we're thinking about. So
there's an element of the public has to retrieve property sometimes too, so there's often that releasing back to the public element that you want to be accessible. So not everything is as long in the evidence as others kind of thing, and so as things are... could be kept for safekeeping, could be kept for lost property, could be kept for evidence, could be, you know, there's a bunch of codes of what you would collect evidence for that Deputy Lee processes.
Okay. So, call me out to see you. I'm interested.
Yeah. everybody here has my phone number but you, but so I'm sure you can get a phone.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move this forward.
And just to clarify this, I believe in the last time we were inundated with phone calls of when this stuff was going to auction. This is the first step in allowing me to actually go through it. So we haven't set any dates. Just make sure. And do I need to be at Wednesday's meeting?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Are you comfortable speaking to this man?
You said there's different venues. You can get rid of this stuff. A live auction, and then you can go online auction.
Yeah, we have a...
Like eBay?
Really? I don't want to
do
that.
You can't do that.
Okay. All right.
Could you update the phone number for Commissioner Van?
That's all this funny stuff.
So what did you mean by online auction?
Well,
PropertyRoom.com.
Public document at that point.
eBay is something I would have to actually enter it. And
eBay scares me. So.
Well, that's it.
Every once in a while.
You know, the goal is to alleviate time, not increase the work.
Probably okay.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't have a camera anymore, so it's a little bit better, but it's still, you know, the best way to do it.
Best practice is always best practice.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Anything else?
If not, again, we have worked very closely together, so
yeah,
you need a backup presenter, I can help with that.
It's not too complicated.
No, it's really not. I want to get rid of this kind of piece.
Yeah. One other element is the revenues they come back to the county. They don't go directly to the sheriff's office. We historically have always appropriated those funds to it. But there's a distinct separation that there isn't the possibility of it being construed that the sheriff's office is generating funds by confiscating or not doing their due diligence to contact people. No, Deputy Lee is doing her job and with no expectation of those revenues being directly returned to that department to do anything. So
you keep a separation of what you do. Do you have any kind of record that somebody said, "Well, you didn't try to get a hold of me"?
I have a lot of information in my database.
You make journal entries and say, on this date I tried to call, and I couldn't find any numbers. You know, I'm in the Roseburg phone book when it shows me up.
Yeah, well, see, I'm not going to go that far. By law, I'm only required to send a letter to the address on the driver's license. If they choose not to follow the law and update their driver's license,
that's not my problem. Yes, okay. But you do have that document. You tried to reach them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, even with phones, I do everything I can, especially with this Harper stuff. I've done everything I can to find donors, and I had 108 people come out and look at the property. So, I mean, I've done way due diligence on this.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
And the other element is
the Harp.
Mr. Harp.
Harp is a person.
Harp is a person. And within a 4-month period of time, he created a great deal of havoc and caused a lot of grief for a lot of people. He didn't just burglarize a little bit. He emptied the houses. A lot of houses. Completely. And
had storeroom, or had...
Conics.
Yeah.
Conics. Conics was 10 by 20 Conics. They delivered to my warehouse, and we pulled everything out, and you know, rather than logging each individual item, because there's simply too much, I would do a pallet of, okay, this pallet contains Craftsman and whatever. I would palletize by type. So okay, here's 2-3 pallets of household goods. Here's 5 pallets of tools. So that's how I did it. There was no other way.
And then you just sell the pallet, or you just categorize them, and then you.
I'm categorizing as a pallet. This is a pallet of tools. I know where that pallet is. I know what's on that pallet because it's in my database. But I don't have every single item on that pallet tagged and barcoded.
Okay.
Which you need to come out to me if you have any kind of understanding.
Okay. I could do that.
Okay, great. Let's let you go.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, thank you for hard work.
Admin or pre-sentence?
I'm not sure. It's an administrative element, I guess.
Okay.
I'll let you know if there's anything you need from me.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Spencer? So before she gets started, this is the structure of the admin calendar. There's departments that are scheduled to come in at various points of the year for reports and updates. And so it depends on how, when I first took office, we had three budgets that were programs that were in a deficit, multi-year, totaling about $1 million. And that was the fair, the parks, and public health. They were on monthly updates. Now they're much better now, and so they're on quarterly updates, I believe. There's a schedule. Departments that are really interesting might be on a monthly basis if marijuana is a pretty high issue and there's constantly reoccurring elements that need to be updated to the board. It's really at our discretion how often we want to hear from departments. So right now, planning is at a quarterly, I believe, and so they'll just come in on a rotating basis and update us on what's going on in the department, how their budget's doing, staffing levels, areas of concern, and so that'll just happen throughout the first quarter.
Okay, commissioners. I'm just going to start with a little background on how our department is set up and some of the functions we do. I'm hoping to get deeper into that individually with each of you. I want to be conscious of your time, but still get some information out to you. So we were, typically we were a planning department and we were a building safety department. They were two different departments. And then this past spring, the county decided to add economic development into the county programming. So they put it with the planning department, so to speak, eventually combined planning, economic development, and building safety together as a department called Community Development Department. So we have not physically co-located everything together. We're in the process of, at the current time, the planning division is on the lower level of the Dimmick building, and building safety is on the upper level. And we're, this spring, very soon, going to try and co-locate everybody to the first floor, so we're all working together. And we're slowly consolidating how we're doing record keeping and some of that stuff. So we're in the very beginning processes of doing all of this consolidation. So when they decided they were going to have the community development department, I was hired as the director. We do have an office manager who will, she was just in charge of just the planning division, but now that we're now that we are consolidated, she'll be the office manager for all of the programs that are within there. We have a planning division. We don't have a planning manager, but we do have four planners. The planning division basically is, you know, they pretty much are processing permits. They're enforcing the Rural Land Development Code, which is zoning, subdivision, erosion control, site plan review, things of that nature. We have the building safety division, and they basically enforce, so planning enforces county code. The Building Safety Division enforces state code. So they're enforcing electric code, plumbing code, things of that nature. They're pretty restricted by the state what they can and cannot do. Same thing with how they set their funding structure. That's pretty monitored or regulated by the state. That the manager of the Building Safety Division is the building official, Mark Stevenson. He also serves second in command for, if I'm not there and they need somebody to sign paperwork, for example, that would be Mark, because he is the only division manager we have throughout all of the programs. Under Mark, there are two inspectors and there are two permit techs. We also have an enforcement arm. That's what we call code enforcement administrator. That position has been on the books a long time. I have some data here for you from 2007. It goes back before then that we've always had this position. That person is responsible for code enforcement of the Rural Land Development Code and the Building Safety Code. So they were historically seated in the planning department, but they served both the planning department and the Building Safety Department. Now, of course, all community development. And then we also have economic development, which was added this past spring. No one staff person is specifically assigned to that. That falls within my duties. And then what I've been doing is directing staff on for example, with planning. You know, it's not just processing of paperwork. We have to think big picture. We have to think about jobs created, how this is going to impact the economy. And so there's can't do as much with economic development as we'd like because it is part of a bigger program, but we're doing pretty good so far. So that's how we're set up. Planning division, just go through a little bit about the receipts, and I've attached them on the other pages. We'll just go through them real quick. So in a nutshell, we're ahead of with revenues and what we've received. We're ahead of where we were last year. Last year we received 79% of what we did this year, so we're basically 21% ahead as far as what we're bringing in. Planning department numbers are actually, they go by fiscal year, so they go from July 1st until June 30th for us. And what we do with the planning program is we like to show how it's been over time. So on that first one, dark blue is the left, and you're looking at the chart on the bottom, the left bar is what we've done this year. And you can see we've really had some spikes over the year. And just looking at February, you'll see how it really spiked. That was everybody coming in to apply for their land use compatibility statements to try and get a marijuana license. So that's what that spike was all about. But there's actually been, you can see there's been, it's been a pretty good year as far as revenues go. A lot of that does have to do with the marijuana industry. A lot of it also has to do with the economy rebounding. Just going to that second page on that, it just kind of shows you where we are 2016 versus 2000 compared to last year. So the first page was 7 year. That one's more just a breakdown compared to last year. And then one thing we had to just throw in there, as you go to the very last, the first side of the last page, one thing we try to share with you is just kind of how much traffic is coming through our counter. So what we do is we have a front counter, and it's open to the public from 8 to noon, 5 days a week, and then we close it down so we can actually do all the paperwork, or you'd never get the paperwork done. So you can kind of see this is just for December, the traffic we've had. What was really interesting is you think it's really should be tapering off right now and getting slower, closer we get to the holidays. We haven't seen that. It's actually been pretty steady. Of course, the week of Christmas, we only had 90, but even the week after that when we had those two snow days, or I shouldn't say that week, but you're still seeing quite a bit of traffic coming through there. So we had 608 people basically come in through the front counter in a month. That's a lot of people.
So, and that's only between 9 and noon?
That's 9 and noon, 8 and noon, and that's just the planning division. That was 608. So if you go to the very last page, that's just a little more detail. It also talks about overall phone calls that were done. So just we, again, just try and track what we can. And I see we've got the wrong tie that we have the wrong data on this. This is actually for the year before. But just to get a picture of it, we do track what's going through there so we can tell how much we're processing.
What are the permits for? New homes, outbuildings? Because
yes.
What are outbuildings would probably be pointed towards the cannabis industry. You know, you're probably going to get a lot of questions for that.
Sure. We have new homes. New homes, accessory buildings, businesses, doing work in a riparian area, perhaps some floodplain work.
You break that down. Do you have like a graph that shows?
I do.
Put together a graph like that. But it's very interesting to find out what's moving and shaking. You know, if it's not commercial buildings or industrial or we need to.
You know, it's interesting. So they historically have not broke it down to that level of detail, and since I've been here, I've said that's what I wanted to happen, because what we're doing is we can show you how many development permits we processed, but historically they didn't say 70% of those were for homes, 20% were for sheds. And I need that data to do my job so I understand what's really going on to get the
Well, especially since you've been saddled with economic development, it'd be really nice to know where,
yeah.
You know, where the activity is.
How many are businesses, what type of business, the scale of the business, that stuff. So that is changing as we go forward. But up until then, they did, and I do have it for this year, you know, they have, you know, I can tell you how many were development, plan or rezone, plan or variance, things of that nature. But there's a lot of detail, which I didn't give you because I don't want to bore you with it. But I can get to that if you want it. But as far as the detail you're looking for, they were not, but they are beginning to track that now.
Okay. Well, as long as we're moving forward with that, I'm okay.
Yeah, it was.
So
surprisingly
in,
dense, but
in the future, we should be able to have data like that.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So this moves on to the safety division. I got there. I did not copy their data for you. I got it after I had done the report yesterday. But I do have it here, and I can get you a copy. They track things a little. They track things differently than we do. So they look at, you know, new buildings, additions, remodels, carports, carport additions, remodels, agricultural things, things of that nature. They give us that detail that we like. So what happens is when a planning, they will not go out, building safety will not look at something unless there's a permit from planning. So although my planning data is silent on how many are homes, et cetera, I do pick that up when I look at the building safety data. So building safety, they gave me their numbers, for example, and they do things differently. So they're not going fiscal year, they do calendar year. So that's something moving forward I have to work with them on. Now, this, it is that the state could be, I haven't talked to them about this, but the state could be requiring it be done calendar. I still want to see it fiscal year so I can compare apples to apples and see what's really going on here.
It seems odd that they would be on two different schedules because then you've got to try to...
Well, they were on different schedules because they were different departments. So, you know, there was a lot of, there's so much overlap between the two that it made sense when the county combined them, because you get somebody going to planning and they say, well, you have to go up to building safety and talk to them about this. And then building safety would say, okay, now you have to go to planning and get this. And there's this back and forth and back and forth. And it just makes sense if they're all together and you say, okay, talk to that guy, you know, and you come back and you can just coordinate better on everything. So...
It's something that we see a lot in cities, and I kind of picked up on this about 2 years ago, and I talked to actually Klamath County and Polk County. They've instituted this structure as well, and I think it serves us really well. Ms. Schmelzer's right. It just makes sense, and I'd love to see. So she's talking about consolidating offices. Not everybody's going to be able to be, but I think the front counter customer service element or the like things that need to work with on a daily basis, because I don't know that, even if staff does fit, I don't know if that's the best idea to have them all crammed down in the planning office. It's not certainly my intent, but eventually we'd like to co-locate that and an administrative element of public work so that mm-hmm. it's kind of a one-stop shop. I'm really waiting on the city to make up their mind with the space over in the Justice Building. If they had that figured out, and I think they do, they just
heard they signed a contract.
Need a plan to move out. You've heard they signed a contract.
I got a call last night from somebody who told me they signed a contract for the other building.
DHS. It'll probably take them 6 months or a year to renovate that the way they wanted to, but that's great. I think that's
really
nice.
Well, and that's
really
the exact space that came to mind for me as you were talking about co-locating, that they have all the windows up there, and if there's one, two, three,
yeah.
It would make so much more sense, and then all the room in the back, that all this, it would handle the space.
It would certainly be...
You can compartmentalize that catacomb.
Right.
At the front counter, you need a one-stop shopping. I think, you know, the main thing is, I think the frustration that I've heard from about planning is the back and forth. Well, I got to go up here, then I got to get back, you know.
Well, and then public works. And then back.
And
public works.
And the clerk's
back,
office.
And make it five trips each.
Treasure and tax.
At some point in time, I'd like to sit down because I have a... It's just an idea that I have that it really stops a lot of back and forth, both for your department and for the customer. And the customer has to know that he is seeing everything all at once.
Oh, I agree with you 1,000%.
Without saying, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you about, you know, did you know?
Yeah.
No, in my business, I used a checklist, and it was for me and the customer. Although I do this every day, I have a tendency to skip over things. And this thing, when I was out looking at your house, made me go look at the electrical panel not just yet. It sparked my interest every time, and it was a given form. And boy, it cleared up. I mean, all the customer relationships, the phone ringing was positive instead of negative. And that was a huge amount of time resource to fighting off complaints when you should have actually done it right in the first place and made sure everybody was on board with every aspect of that project. And it really helped me out.
I completely agree. I think that's exactly what we.
But I would like to sit down at some point in time with you and you know, if the liaison and chairman, and I'll just kind of show you what I did in business.
Sure.
And how it was beneficial to me and what areas that it cured. I mean, it stopped it now.
We should talk about that pretty soon. And I know you said you were going to come over and we're going to talk, but.
Yeah.
One of the things we're working on right now, and we'll get to it later here, is a software program to help with some of that. Mm-hmm. And the other one is complete redirection of how they're doing things. Because one of the complaints I had and one of the problems I have is I'm going to ask you how much a permit is, and they're going to tell me, and I'm going to go and I'm going to jump through all those hoops, and then I'm going to get a letter saying, okay, now you need to do this, and it's going to be this much money, and I'm going to jump through that hoop, and then I'm going to get a final letter telling me now you need your development permit with this much money. I hate it.
Yep.
And it's stopping. And we have gotten rid of the site plan review fee, but that also allows us to tighten up that process where I told them, I said, I want that template that goes out with that site plan review to tell me exactly all the permits I'm going to need and exactly
start to finish.
Start to finish and what is the range on permit fees that's going to cost me.
What?
And it has to be in that site plan review, that very first one you get. So they know what's involved, so they know whether to pursue the project or not.
How do they plan if it's a...
Well, that's a problem in the private sector, you know, because when, for instance, if a contractor says, I want to build this house, and he brings the plans in, and then they say, well, this is what it's going to cost, and he takes that number, puts it on his sheet, mm-hmm. and tells the people it's going to be $318,000 I can build that house. And then planning comes back and says, well, did we tell you about the water line out in the street? And you know you have to hook up to that sewer, you know, and that just, that, and the guy can't go back, that contractor can't go back to the customer and say, oh, by the way, you see it on HGTV where, I'm going to rebuild your house for $179,000 budget. And then they go, oh, you see the electrical panel? In my mind, I wouldn't have had that contractor on the job if he didn't look at the electrical panel first before he advised me to buy the house. But that's where we want to go. And the more we can help that contractor to make money and be successful and avoid these holes in the trap doors in the process, everybody's going to be happy. And then we start getting, instead of Joseph County getting bad marks from contractors, you're going to start getting those good marks. Over next door, and that's the only experience I have, I've been in construction for 35 years, they said, well, we have workshops, and we ask the contractors if we're doing a good job. You think that contractor would come in and say, you know, this place stinks. They're not going to do that because you hold the hammer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it. Figuratively. You hold.
They don't want to get tied up with extra
they don't,
stuff.
They don't
not
want
ever
to
gonna
get off on the wrong foot with your department or the inspector even or anybody. They can make life miserable for a contractor and very expensive at the same time. So that's why I think we need to clear everything up before anybody invests their money. It's all taken care of. And you will find that they'll be on your side. And that's what we want. When we want our contractors and other contracts to move in and say, how's the building safety department, the planning department to work with Joseph City County? Mm-hmm. Man, they're great. I get everything up front, it's one-stop shopping, so on and so forth. That word spread.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do. We're also, as a region, trying to get to that point. So we work with Soretti, which is a regional economic development group we'll talk about. They market Southwest Oregon, and one of the things we're trying to work with them on them as two is that they will have a sheet on every community on these are all your fees involved, this is the time frame involved. We're trying to also crunch down our time that it takes to review something because the state, and I was talking with Commissioner here about this yesterday, you know, the state gives us so much time. That doesn't mean we have to take that time.
Exactly.
Right, right.
By shortening up our site plan review process, but making sure they know everything involved, that also allows us more time to start working on that review sooner, which means, for example, if the City of Grants Pass has 150 days, but their record is to do it in 120 days, which Jackson County has something similar, then we should be able to match that. So we can say, in Southwest Oregon, we are a great place to do business. Come here, and this is what you're guaranteed. And that's what we're striving to get through the renovation of these processes. So.
The sponsor has also taken a comprehensive look at both fee structures for building and safety and planning, and in many cases done pretty significant reductions in those to help, you know, alleviate that angst of you know, removed the pre-application fee. I think that was $375 or something like that. That was a Commissioner Haugen proposal back in the day. He didn't assign the revenue element to it. It's just the idea that people would have an opportunity to say, I'm thinking about doing this. And that now, it's over time, it's atrophied into this thing where it's a full-blown application is what people are doing. It's like, no. That was not the intent. It's to get all your ducks in a row, have the questions answered before you start shelling out money to say, now I'm paying for what I really want to do.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm going to expect.
Well, it's business decisions. Do I want to go forward with it or not? And you need to know everything up front before you do.
We've forgotten that we're public service. And I say we in a sense that there's this requirements of the state and the land use laws. So it's kind of this justification of I'm the enforcement, I'm the role, and I'm sorry, I don't have to do it. How often can we actually say, you know, I know you'd like to do here, this is how you can get there. And that's what I would like us to have the reputation for. And not just, okay, go to this window, go to that window, go to that window, now back to this window. It's like, why can't they turn an application and then we say, here we go, now here's the next step, here's the next step, here's the next step, here you go. And how are we remembering that we work for them?
I agree with you. You know, I think we've come a long way in the past six months.
We've
dropped the ridiculous fees. We're streamlining the processes. We're getting the information out front. We're trying to, you know, I've told staff, you try and find a way to do that project. There's some that we just can't do,
sure.
You know, total restricted. But the other ones, let's work with them. Let's say, you know, if you drop this, then we can permit this. Or if you add this, then we can get you a permit on this. And we need to provide that service. Okay?
And when you know, it's just, you know, if you just had this gone, this would all work.
Yep.
And by telling them that,
instead of saying,
oh, no, but you need to go hire a planning, blah, 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 blah. They're experts in the field. They work for the public. It would get things done in the reputation. One of our goals we talked about is RPR. And for me, our customer service of remembering, yes, we have a job to do, and it's ethical, it's legal, it's all these things that we have a standard we have to meet. But with that, it's remembering of we are here to serve you, and we want to do it with a happy heart, and that we're glad to do it, not feeling like we're begrudged that, oh my gosh, you're making me do work. You get to work as a public service, you know, so...
Well, and there
is a balancing act between planning's responsibility to, like you said, enforce state land use laws, which is serving everybody by that.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly serving the person individually by meeting all of their needs when they come through the door. The Schmelzer's the fifth planning director that I've worked with here. I didn't hire all of those other ones. There was one guy that I inherited when I first got here. Multiple personalities and all sorts of stuff, but all of their budget presentations have always started with the first line: what is the role of planning? And it's to regulate state land use and local codes. It's like, no, it isn't. That's not your first goal. Yours is to facilitate development in an orderly fashion within the confines of state and local regulations.
Find a way that it can happen.
Yeah,
and if it can't happen, be very specific as to why it can't happen.
Yeah.
Some people come in with ridiculous stuff and you know, it just isn't going to make it. But.
Well, and understanding that these people's projects, sometimes the challenging thing that you honestly want to say no to first, that's the whole reason they're doing this. And I've heard of people say, they don't understand. I'm doing this project around this thing that is challenging. Everything else that is easy, that's not why we're doing it.
I just read it for entertainment work, but the treehouse guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a prime example. This guy has an idea, and yet everything in the world was against it. Everything.
Well, it's not as easy as it sounds, and we can talk about it.
May I ask one more question when you're done?
You can. Sure, I was just going to say, great news on that guy, too. He, just a little example of how we change things. He actually is going to have a tasting room up there now. He is one of the treehouse, we have two treehouse people. This one has the tree houses out there, and he built a tree house to look like a saloon, like an old saloon. It overlooks a 50-acre vineyard, and he's opening up a tasting room in there. So it's one of those things that first he got a denial, and we talked, and it's like, no, there's got to be a way to make this happen. I mean, this is good stuff. You know, one thing I think, and I'm grateful that I was hired by the previous board, one of the things that I bring to Josephine County, which I think is so beneficial to this program, is I had not only planning and the zoning, but I had the economic development experience. I had a tourism role, and then I had the public administration role. So, you know, it's, I think I'm probably the first one to look at it and say, we're not just looking at it from a regulatory standpoint. We're looking at this saying, how can we get people here? How can we create jobs? How can we provide public service? And it's working really, really good. We've got a good thing going down there right now.
I told her she's got job security from the standpoint that we have so much work to do that she's not young enough to
our fee structure
get it done before she leaves.
County doesn't have system development charges and stuff like the city does, do they? Or do they have parks?
Josephine County is the only one in the area that does not have the system development charges, which is a plus if I had land to come and do business on. So that's something we'll get on later on here too. But you know, Jackson County charges for the system development charges. There's stories there. We just talked about a story where somebody went in and invested this, built a big golf course. When they're all done, they got, I think it was $200,000 in system development charges that they were not aware of when they got the permit. So we, the bad thing is we don't charge for that, so more of the road cost expense, et cetera.
We don't have systems other than roads that people necessarily hook up with. We used to have the Redwood Sewer District, which was really, we tangentially administered that, but now the city's taken that over, and you'll remember the last couple of years. And then the water, municipal water system in the North Valley, that's really a city water system that we hook into.
We don't collect for money to go to parks or anything like that. So that's a good thing for Josephine County. It really is.
Well, when Lily and I first got on the council, one of our first big hurdles, we were handed Home Depot. And when we got done looking at what the sidebar was for the building, which was the building property, $12.5 million project, and the sidebar was $5.7 million of requirements of Home Depot to the surrounding area. That included ODOT and so on and so forth. It was huge. And I thought, why would they even want to build in Grants Pass, Oregon? Because we are in competition. We maybe not used to have been a competition, but we are now. We have been for a long time. For somebody that's looking to build here or build Medford, build Roseburg, they just come, it's a blank canvas to them, and we have to sell them on that fact. Mm-hmm. And we did a couple of studies, rate studies, over on the other side of the pond over there, and they were pretty compelling. But if we don't have SDCs here to compare to other counties, and you say Jackson County does, and that's to us, it's okay, you know, that segment of it. But mm-hmm. are we able to provide the services that Jackson County, or our parks up to the Jackson County thing, because we don't charge the system development charge, so that we can get our parks up to stuff. So there's you know, some pro and con on it.
Yeah, it to a business, it's a good thing, you know, looking coming in, but.
There's also a construction excise tax that Josephine County collects through the Building and Safety Department. It's 50 cents a square foot on residential properties up to a certain square foot. And the same thing, it's 50 cents per square foot. It's $1 per square foot on residential. It's 50 cents per square foot on commercial, up to $30,000, I think, for commercial on a project. Do you know the threshold for residential? There's a threshold, a cap. But that's something that we collect for the school districts that we don't necessarily have to do. That we elected to do that about 10 years ago when they instituted that. And for Three Rivers, it brings in around $330,000, and they use that for their infrastructure maintenance. And so it would be a significant hit to Three Rivers if we elected to not do that, and then they elected to not do that on their own. So it's something, though.
I don't want to burden with more work, but I would like to have a list of, like, say, for instance, if I were to come in with a permit for a demo app or whatever, what all is it going to cost me, and what categories do I fall into as far as charges? And you're just saying, well, we don't have this, but we have this, we don't have that, but we have this, so I want all of what we have.
Yeah, and the other thing,
just for my own,
bigger than that is that the offices coordinate. So you also have an assessor's fee, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, Connie's got those downstairs. and then Public Works has theirs. Well, you're going to need a road access improvement, and you're going to have engineering because this is a non-conforming use or some sort of a change in use on your property for your rural industrial or something like that.
There's are those state requirements? You have to have microns, you have to put a road into it, so it's got to be engineered because is that a state requirement?
Even if you're not putting in a road, I mean, there's you're doing a new business and it's not the same as the business that was before. They need a traffic impact study, perhaps. And I haven't seen a delineated threshold. It's somebody saying, well, that's different than the last blah, blah, blah that was located there. I might need but when you tell the client, I need a traffic impact study, they don't know that you mean, I just need you to go talk to an engineer and tell me, you know, yay or nay on this deal. They hear traffic impact study and they think $5,000 to $10,000 on the cheap stuff.
That's like,
yeah. That's like, oh, well then I can't do this. It's like, so they've got all their stuff through planning. They're at the, you know, did you check with Public Works? Go get that signed off. You've got to be kidding me. I've got to spend $10,000 to $15,000 and that's
for a driveway.
The system, yeah, is.
Well, it seems we're all on the same page that you're expressing as well, that we want to make it better. We are looking at streamlining. Whichever right letters come out in the right order to get there. One of the new trends that's going on right now is tiny houses, tiny homes. And I've heard that Oregon's development code is kind of behind on allowing some of that. And so that's something that might be worth
We talked about that yesterday, and that's on her goals as a housing element. And we talked about different zones and communities. I wasn't aware of it, but it's also something that I think, you know, we need a legislative champion in the state. Housing is like number two after transportation is an issue that the state wants to address in this legislative session. I think what we need to be aware of is that legislators. Most of the legislators represent metropolitan areas, and they're going to solve the land use issue from a metropolitan perspective. And they're going to leave rural Oregon high and dry. If we don't have, you know, and I know the planners are working on a process right now of putting in proposals of making something work really well. There's a subset of AOC, and then AOC will champion this.
Well, I'm going to guess it seems like everything else. Like, for instance, ODOT has certain projects. If you go ahead and scope that project, you get it all ready to go, you put it on the shelf, and tiny homes, eventually, the cities, the bigger cities get their tiny home policies all in place. They're going to be looking, they're not going to just close that department. They're going to be looking, reaching out to the rural. And if you're saying, yeah, we've got something ready to go here in Gilstead County, we may be able to put some funding on that.
There's a real, for land use, there's a and very active, keep it rural part of Oregon. I think our land use laws, by some people's opinions, are some of the most restrictive in the nation of developing natural resource, exclusive farmland or woodlot resource kind of areas. And so I don't know I don't disagree with you, but historically, when they've solved their problem in the urban area, they move on. They don't keep looking for, oh, I guess we could sell something out there in the rural part of the state. I haven't seen that, really. But it
does remind me, one of the things that AOC is doing is looking at, I'm already doing the resilient counties, which is moved to Tuesday mornings. Well, housing is also being looked, so I can be intentional to attend AOC housing and be pushing
good.
That we are not forgotten.
It's really important that the rural part of the state show up, which what I see, you know, one of the reasons I try to make it to AOC is because if everybody in rural Oregon decides that, oh, well, somebody else is going to be championing that issue or show up for that, you'll find yourself with everybody who, every commissioner that, you know, lives and works in the Salem, Eugene, or Portland area fills the room, and it's our fault that AOC, our association, we're paying money to, they're not championing our issue because we're not showing up.
Yeah.
So
I'll keep going here a little bit. So building safety, last year they permitted 64 homes. This year it was 84 homes. So you see that rebounding back. That's just in the unincorporated areas of Josephine County. That still is not enough to meet our housing demand for the people that are moving in here. On the bright side, the valuation is about $30,000 higher than the median value. So it's, census says, you know, your median homes are at this price. What we're seeing now with these last 2 years is the value of those homes being built are significantly higher. That's good from a taxation standpoint. That's bad for an affordability standpoint. So we have some challenges there.
That's a really interesting stat. The median average residential property is valued at about $155,000, I think, in the county. And so 30 over that, that's, you know, pretty good.
So economic development just here is not, is a little different than what I'm used to. I'm used to somebody coming in, I help work them through all their, the loans they need, the grants, their licenses, and all that other stuff. We don't do that here. What we do is, in Southwest Oregon, we have partners that help with that. So some of our partners, one is SEREDI, that's called the Southwest Oregon Regional Economic Development, Inc., and it's our EDA. Basically, they get federal funds to help do economic development here. They go out, they have a director who goes to Ohio, Texas, et cetera, to try and recruit people to bring their businesses here. They also have a large loan program where they can loan you $1 million, $500,000, et cetera. So I sit on their board right now. Eventually one of you will sit on that board as well, and I'll be your backup. I sit on their business retention committee. So that's that group. We also do a lot with the chamber. The chamber is actually the Grants Pass Josephine County Chamber, so it's both. We have a partnership on that. They have, I'm active with them on their business retention and expansion program.
That will also be Commissioner Dan.
Yeah. Okay.
I was there Tuesday morning. They were supposed to have an 8 o'clock meeting.
7:30.
I was told 8 o'clock, and I was there at 8 o'clock, and no one was there, so I went on the... I had a conflicting thing anyway, so I was going to ODOT.
I'll have to get your phone number because I found out about it on my way to the meeting, so I found out about 7:15 that it was canceled. So.
Yeah, Commissioner DeYoung is SOREDI, Chamber of Commerce Board, the Government Affairs Committee of the Board, and the R&E. So
okay,
you
good.
Can cover all of that.
So I'm partnering with you on
those. It is a little interesting as a liaison to planning, community development, and economic development, that those aren't in the same wheelhouse. So,
oh come on now, I see what you're.
I don't. Yeah, right. You see where it's going, and I like your perspective on stuff. You're saying the same
people
thing.
We're starting to lean this way.
Yep. Well, we'll work on that over time.
Okay.
Well, probably make that's good for me because then I've got two board members actively engaged in economic development. That helps me with my plan.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
I think all three of us will be.
Yeah, fully engaged. Airports,
huge. Fairgrounds.
So
it's a huge thing.
They're all connected at some point.
Yeah.
We just can't all do it all.
No.
So then we work a lot with SCDC, Small Business Development Center. They do a lot of one-on-one with people that want to go into business, or let's say they have a small business and they want to expand into a larger one. They do a lot with training as well, workforce training. IBCDO is the Illinois Valley Community Development Organization. They run our microloan program. So if you need $25,000, they run that. It's a revolving loan fund program.
Just for Illinois Valley or the whole
nope.
county?
No. Nope. And that's one of the things we need.
Good to know.
When we're able to do some marketing here, that's one of the things we have to work on.
The city just turned theirs over to IB.
Yes.
Yeah, they just said, you know, we'll let them IB do it because they're way more successful than the city's ever been.
Yeah, experiences government shouldn't be running loan programs, but so they're located in Cape Junction, but they serve the entire county as well as part of Jackson County. Okay, so we have a partnership with the city of Grants Pass to do joint economic development efforts. We also, as you know, are working on that joint economic development plan, and then we're supposed to be setting up a joint economic development committee with them.
How's that going?
It's been put on hold by the city, so we're. They had some other things come up that will kind of push it back a little bit, but it's still on the radar.
Can we set up an opportunity that we can sit down with them?
Sure.
Can chart out a course for that, because I don't want to wait. From my perspective, we can institute it utilizing the preliminarily agreed upon board members and structure, and when the city wants to join in, it'd be just fine. I think it'd be fairly seamless, but... I wanted those positions filled January 1 So that was my goal with Aaron 2 years ago, that you'd have this committee set up. And frankly, the committee should have been established, in my opinion, prior to the economic development plan being so that we weren't responsible with the council guiding that. It should be the experts in the field who have got the authority from both bodies to say, go forth and guide this process so you get exactly what you want. Because right now, I don't think anybody got what they wanted out of that. And Ms. Meltzer and I've chatted, it's not exactly, it could have been better. And so let's get that group organized and moving it forward.
Let them.
Yeah. Can you email me that plan, please?
So, and just being on that plan to...
Plan and committee structure? Proposed committee structure.
To all?
Yeah. Right.
So just, you know, too, we do have that joint economic development plan, but I will be developing my own internal economic development plan to keep, so my department is keeping on track with economic development. That will be brought to you as well. So we'll have our own Josephine Coney one that we're working off of as well. So
Illinois Valley went through a pretty robust process of developing their strategic plan. I don't think it's really just limited. What I read wasn't just limited to economic development. I mean, it had social issues and a whole bunch of other stuff, which economic development could certainly have. But I think we need to kind of like integrate elements of that. I mean, we are the county. That's our second incorporated city. So that we're tracking with what they're doing and they're tracking with what we're doing. So
and then the last one that we work with pretty closely is Business Oregon. So they actually, the state doesn't have much as far as incentives to get people here. They do have an enterprise zone program where you can get the taxes deferred if you're in an enterprise zone. All of Josephine County is in the enterprise zone. But they also work with us as far as they get leads. So they get leads and Soretti gets leads. So I'll get notices that says company from, it might say where they're from, Ohio or whatever, is looking for 200 acres, rail service, X amount of amps, et cetera, et cetera. And I always have to go delete because I have no industrial land. But anyways, again, we'll get back to that someday. But so we work with them closely on that. They'll also talk about new programs or incentives they're working on. They also help market our programs. They and Soretti market our programs that are different, or properties that are different areas. So the state maintains a list. So if anyone can look at their database and say, I want industrial property, I want 500,000 square feet, and it'll populate where that land is. So they have that type of database. They're also working on some initiatives to help communities with industrial space, et cetera. So I stay in contact with them on stuff like that as well. So. Okay, so I'm going to move on to enforcement real quick. So I just have on the second page, enforcement is our code enforcement administrator. That's Denise. Denise started August 4th. If you haven't met her, she's phenomenal. She was a private investigator specializing in gangs. I always tell the story, specializing in gangs. So when she goes out to a property, she's not afraid to confront people with a problem. She also has a style. We have, between Mark, the building official, myself, and Denise, we have kind of a new philosophy in the office, and that is, you don't come down with a hammer. You know, yes, we want enforcement, but we want to work with these people as well. So you can't say, you shall do this in 30 days and that's it. It doesn't work that way, especially if you're dealing with somebody that, let's say, has a major junkyard. They may have hoarding issues or something. So we need to take that human side and actually work with them to try and get compliance. So it's more of a relationship that we form with these people versus just putting down that hammer on them. So. But what we have done is this year has been, so with that new accepting philosophy, people are more willing to come to you with complaints. We've also had a lot more complaints as a result of some of the industry changes that we've had out there this year. So I just put together a little bit for you. So in 2016, we had 2009 open cases. 176 of those have been just since Denise has been here in August. And then she has also some that have been reported but have not been open. Altogether right now we have 585 open cases, meaning 585 violation files that she is working on at the current time. 36% of those are just since she started on board. This is also one of those reasons why I advocate for a citation ordinance, because some of these, there's a lot of taxpayer dollars invested in something. Denise, you know, when you're running a planning program and you're processing a permit, you get a permit fee. When you're doing enforcement, there's no fee to cover what you're doing. So these 585 cases she's working on are all funded through basically taxpayer dollars.
It's probably the general fund element
it's
of the budget.
Fund, yeah. She has, it's interesting, you heard a case yesterday about somebody being aggressive at a gate. She gets that a lot. She also gets a lot of concerns from neighbors. We get a lot of, and I'll use elderly people, it's not just elderly people, they come in, they're crying. The story I always repeat, and I'm sorry if you've heard it before, is we have an elderly couple now that takes turns sleeping so they can guard their property from people that have moved into their neighborhood and now are stealing or doing damage and things like that nature. So, you know, it's an interesting program, but you really have to have a human side to make it work. You can't be at this hard line. Your 30 days is up, that you're done, you know. But what we do with them is when we eventually cannot get compliance, we come to you and then we say, are you okay with this moving forward to legal? And then Leah Harper, the woman who sat on the end, she is the one who processes or works with us on trying to get compliance through Wally's office on those ones that we just can't get compliance on. The county has adopted a policy that when you're in violation, we give you you get three notices. The first notice gives you 30 days to comply. The second notice gives you 15 days to comply, and the third notice gives you 7 days to comply. After that, we can bring it to you to forward to Leah. You'll never see it work that way because we continue to try and work with these. We have some that are years old, months old, etc. We also try to prioritize them on severity. Compounds kind of rank higher with us. They really disturb neighborhoods. They're not fair to those that are paying taxes, etc. There's also health issues, sanitation issues associated with those. So those are usually the ones that you'll get more of coming here if we don't get compliance.
You have a fine line with personal property rights, too, and a lot of this, I think that's where a lot of your complaints come back, your kickback comes back, because it's my land, I'll do what I want.
Right, and then we say, however, you know, we're part of society, and our society has adopted a code. This is the code. This is why they have that rule on there. This is the intent of it, and this is why you have to comply. And like I said, if you just come on and say, too bad, this is it, you're going to get that real property right resistance. You have to work with the people to make it work.
What if they have no economic means of...
We also have a priority of health and safety. So those are the elements that we won't see a case come before the board, utilizes her time, her offices, or legal's time that isn't pursuing a health or safety violation. So I'm of the perspective that I don't want you to keep working on something that is a health and safety past those previously outlined 30, 15, and 7 days. Bring it to the board. Those things need to happen right on schedule. And we'll pursue it, we'll take them to court, and we'll get some action. Because health and safety is not something I want to mess around with. But I don't really think there's enough health and safety that we really don't spend too much time as a board doing other things. The capacity to pay is a constant struggle, honestly. And I think that it's really tough. There's also a mental health element of people who are addicted to stuff. So we've done in the past, spent some money on solid waste stuff that we go in and we clean up. And don't you know, it's amazing how fast the problem comes back on the same property with the same people. And to a degree, if you know, the person's responsible, but they don't even know what they're doing. You know, it's their responsibility, but it's almost not their fault, you know. So, but it's a negative impact to property values of neighbors, and it's a health and safety element. So, yeah, it's a balancing.
Is there an abatement process of sorts?
What Denise will do on these, you know, you see some of these that they're not financially able to clean it up, they're not mentally able or physically able to clean it up. So she will work with them on a compliance plan. Provided they respond within that first 30 days,
we'll work with them. We'll say, okay, I'm going to come back in 30 days and I want to see this pile gone. I'm going to come back in 60 days and, you know, and she lays that all out up front as expected of them to try and help them through it, through that process.
And some people don't know how to, some people don't know how to live like I want them to live. They are incapable of that. And to go in there and say, okay, I want you to do this, I guess, and you say you got to sell them on health and safety, they don't even connect with that because they feel what they're doing is perfectly healthy and has been safe for years because this is what I've always done.
Right.
I had some of them really outlying areas. You know, I had a gentleman up in Wolfpick said, you know, what are you going to do for me up here? I said, nothing. I'm not going to come up here and tell you how to live. You live in Wolf Creek because you want to live like people in Wolf Creek want to live. And
right.
And although they're inside Josephine County, you know, for me to go up there and say, no, I want you to wash your car twice a week because that's what I do, I that's a fine line.
The health and safety problem. Would be like they've got an RV, somebody's living in it, and it doesn't have appropriate, it's not hooked up to facilities appropriately. Somebody can't legally be living in it anyway.
Right.
But for me, the where I want to see the schedule go is that I don't know where that septic system, where that waste is going, and that's, you know, everybody lives downstream from somebody, and so that's a priority for me that we get that under control, and they've got to do whatever it takes to get that in compliance.
And then what's the enforcement though? If they can't get that in compliance, what is the enforcement? Do you just go physically say, hey, we're going to condemn this place and burn it to the ground?
No.
You know, that's
we've
not, I don't
never had to do that.
Size.
No, and that's the misconception of it. You know, and so people are kind of like you were talking about how, you know, these are my property rights. The code, I may not like the way you live, but that doesn't mean you're in violation of the code. We can only enforce within a code. And the enforcement side of it is we continue to work with you to try and get it. And if we just can't get anywhere, we'll bring it to the board, and then it's up to the judge to decide how to get compliant. If we had a citation ordinance, that would make it, like I said, a little easier, and we'll talk about that coming up with some amendments, but that would at least help us get that enforcement quicker. And
it's a lengthy process for us to go to court, and we've only done it a couple of times. It's expensive on our end, and a lot of the times it's the issue you talked about. There isn't the capacity to pay, so you're gonna institute a fine and a penalty on people who don't have a capacity to pay to do what we ask them to do. So their capacity to do it is even less. That doesn't make any sense.
I guess that's what the citations seem to be the same thing.
Well, the citation, the way it's written right now is, it says we're gonna honor the county's policy of the 3015. But we want to incorporate that compliance plan detail in there. And then as a last resort, if you can't, we're going to have to give you a citation. What happens with citations, as you probably know, is if they clean it up, the citation is dropped. You know, so it's kind of like that last carrot that you can give before you go to this very expensive process.
But even, I guess where I'm coming from and why I asked about abatement, citation, court, resultant fines doesn't clean up the problem.
So we have institute programs. They're usually for major health and safety issues where the people don't have a capacity and the county steps in. We do it. We
in conjunction with Solid Waste Agency?
Oftentimes, you know, we fund it through that. And then the county or the Solid Waste Agency puts a lien on the property. You know, we've had some that are $80,000. There's a piece of property out to Kilma that was $115,000 or something like that. The problem is we have no expectation of ever getting paid by that. That the value of the property isn't what the lien is. And so, but it is what it is. I mean, that one was thousands of tires that were lit on fire, and that's why it cost over $100,000 to clean that up. We can't just leave it there, you know. So that's where everything comes back. You know, you don't think you have county has liability for everything at some point. And we just, rather than waiting, so on that one property, waiting till we either foreclosed on it, which I think we eventually did because we own it now, and then the cost of the abatement is more, if you just get in there and clean it up now, we're going to inherit it because people are going to walk away from it with a lien over the value of the property, and we get it.
I think something people don't understand, too, is, you know, our goal is to always work with these people and just get compliant. And the citation carries is, we do have those people that are like, too bad, go away. Or every time you go there, they have a gun. And they just refuse to do it. Five campers, everyone's going in, all defecating in a hole, illegal wells. I don't think that's fair to the environment or to other taxpayers. If that person is not willing to talk to us, respond to us, do anything, I don't have an option. I mean, right now our option is the expensive way through court, which is more expensive to them. So, you know, you continue to work with them, and if eventually you can't get there, you have to have some different carrot, is, I guess, the way we look at it. But anyways, I'm just going to keep going on this. So current major projects that we're working on is the marijuana management rules that you'll see coming in January 23rd. Those include other things that we became aware of. The charge by the board at that time was to address marijuana management for rural residential zones. In researching that, a bunch of other issues came to light that needed to be addressed. So it's a pretty comprehensive set of amendments. You've received some documents from me in advance for that that hopefully you can read through.
Is there a time urgency on that? Because one of the things that I've talked about is a cannabis advisory board and having more public input in the process of mitigating and different stuff like that.
So there was talk about a cannabis advisory board. This board, the previous board, turned that down until such time as the joint Grants Pass Josephine County committee was set up, so that could be a subset group out of there.
And was that a pun intended? Joint
Grants Pass? Oh, sorry. No, but so we did have a small group. You know, I had put together a little ad hoc group that worked on some of the rules with me and vetted them through there. I will say this as far as time goes, I think a lot of your neighbors have had it. I think they're done. We see people moving out. They want to take that. They want to have, I think, some assurance of what's going to happen. The rules are very minor. However, from an enforcement standpoint, planning standpoint, we would like to have those rules in place before the next growing season starts. I don't think it's fair to somebody who has put their investment on their property for me to come out and say, in June the rules change. You got to pull out 20 of your plants. That's just bad government, and that's bad policy, I think. So,
or move them all or something like that. If we had a setback requirement on residential, you know, of 150 feet and they're right on the property line, which isn't really nice to their neighbors, we should do it earlier. You say the growing season is happening right now. It's just happening indoors. So the outdoor growing season, that really we're seeing a lot of the challenges, although there is a light component to the indoor growing that's having a negative impact on rural residential neighbors. So it's going to be tough, and it's really not Ms. Schmelzer's fault that the state just put this in our lap, spent a bunch of time on issues that were probably relevant to urban areas, but really didn't consider all of the issues. Representative Wilson was on the 91 Implementation Task Force and was championing a lot of these challenges that he says, hey, nobody's paying attention to the land use elements and stuff. You're causing conflicts. And
Josephine and Jackson are the suppliers. They don't have land use element in Lake County because it doesn't grow in Lake County. You know, your production is right here in Jackson and Josephine, so therefore, the rest of you, you're not going to accept it. The rest of the state doesn't even give a rip whether you have grow lights in the middle of the night.
They think it's fine. In fact, they were going to retire the 91 Implementation Task Force.
Because they don't experience.
They're not having issues.
It's not an issue with us. Smell? What are you talking about? It doesn't smell.
Right. And, you know, the other thing is, too, so after these rules are adopted, you know, you have to go through and you have to read your ordinances twice. Then there's a 90-day period before they're effective. Originally, we wanted to have this all done so we could have letters out to people in April before they got the plants in the ground telling them what the rules were. Now we're pushed up against that where we're going to be getting that letter out to them in May, provided it's passed. Yeah, so I prefer not to wait because of the problems associated with that. Another hearing
public hearing that you're going to be hearing on is public hearings officer. The previous board wanted a hearings officer. They had Wally draft a bunch of language. It now has to be run through my office, though, because it's actually an amendment to our code. So that will be coming before you. Housing is a big project I'm working on. I've got a bunch of data here, which I'm not going to share with you. We have a meeting set on February 6th to address some of that. My goal is to bring forward some amendments to you on things we can do in our code to increase the opportunities for housing and the affordability of housing. Going through everything, I found out we didn't have a rural road numbering ordinance. That came to light because originally the state said, back to marijuana here, originally...
Can I just interrupt?
Speed it up?
Yeah, no, okay. I think we're going to have to read the rest of your report right
okay.
now. And we're going to have an opportunity to go through her goals and the major projects that she's working on in the near future. I'm sorry, but I think you spent time on the stuff that was really relevant and pertinent
right now.
And the other things we're definitely going to get to, not that it's not important.
And both of us intend to separately come spend time
good.
With you.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, we can't do it together because then we've got an open meeting. But, I mean, my intent is to go to every department and spend time in every department.
Yep.
And so I need to work to get that on the calendar to just start scheduling.
No, sure. Just look at the goals that are on there, and then you can talk about that or any other issue that you have or want to talk about, and I'll get you something else that you didn't ask for.
Thank you very
much. Just if you do have a meeting at some time and an admin, any kind of meeting, let me know in the beginning, and I'll try to structure the meeting to where it accommodates your appointment.
I will. I don't have one copy.
Where is your... I mean, you have to leave right now?
Nope, I'm not leaving. It's here.
Because we do have a couple of other things we just have to get through and talk about to move forward. So thank you very much, Mr.
Spencer.
Item number 5A is Resolution 2017-002 in the matter of reappointment to the Josephine County and Community Development Council.
I'm okay moving that one forward. There's one name on there that's a reappointment, Donna Jean Wendell.
Oh, she's great. Fantastic. That sounds great. It'll go on the consent.
Can that be consent?
Yep. All appointments and stuff, they go on the consent. Anything? There's one element of a discussion of Arthur's public works review and assessment. I was supposed to bring that forward. We really don't have time to discuss it here today, but I think prior to taking office, we had discussed this element of a review of public works. That one's never been done before. The staff, Rob Brandis, JJ, and Arthur have reviewed the proposals, and so we had talked about this before. You guys asked to review those.
This is being brought back
for us to move it forward for adoption of the recommendation to the weekly business session. Now I remember what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Do you have any concerns? Do we need to go over that?
No,
we can.
I thought the scoring and the price actually for once came in consistent with each other. That doesn't happen very often when you have a scoring system, and then you find that, you know, this guy scored really high, but he's the most expensive. Well, this one here, the cheapest guy was scored the highest. So
okay.
I move forward.
I have not had a chance to look at all the RFP requirements and that it met the requirements.
Okay.
I know that I still intend to move it forward for weekly business.
And if you have something?
We can still bring it up.
I still expect to massage the scope of work to make sure that's the thing that I think as the project start out, but you can do the same thing as the liaison to public works. I'd love for us to both be able to come back and say, I think we're good on this. We don't really need to, I don't need them to do an assessment of our earthquake resiliency element. No, we'll get somebody else to do that.
Well, another thing, as I mentioned the other day, you know, when you ask for a study, you have to be specific what you're asking for and what elements you want them to look at, or they just won't look at it.
Yeah.
So
well, for me,
I think that's where Commissioner Morgan wanted to look at the RFP to make sure that all the elements of concern were in there. And, you know, and as you say, maybe scratch some out that are of real importance.
It was more than I wanted to spend.
Yeah.
I'll be perfectly honest, $30,000 is where I was really coming in. Yeah. $25,000 was better, $30,000 was the top, $48,000 is a little bit more than I'm. But, you know, I think it's going to pay dividends for the next decade because we've never done one of these, and people have questions and concerns, and
even at the 38, the 30 to 48 or 47 or whatever it was, that doesn't really concern me as long as we get a product. You know, when we get everything we want in that product,
willing to pay for
it, then it's worth the money. But you know, we did, I think a couple of them that we did on the city side over there, we were disappointed in the results of the study because it didn't cover things that going in we thought were important, and they never even tapped on it.
So we can move it to admin or where does
administrative it calendar items.
And so then if we have things that come up, we bring them up there, or we ask that it be put off. Either off.
Both.
Okay.
Either one. We can address it at the weekly business session. So this afternoon we have a general discussion at 2 o'clock. I have other things, but I think we can talk about them then.
That's
and so I will go over a final liaison. There's I can do that now. There's IT in his job description has a thing that he reports to the board, and so it wouldn't be appropriate.
Not as
I looked at it. So I moved it down to where everything else is that looks like his. It's an ISF function, a small deal, but I wanted to let you know that that's how that one's going to be structured. And
so he had an issue with me being his liaison.
No,
not just Stephen.
No, JJ actually brought that to my attention. So, and it wouldn't have been consistent. So,
okay, if you guys can look at your calendars for this afternoon, we got an email about the IV Fire banquet. It's the same time as the Chamber of Commerce banquet. So I would be curious. I have an RSVP because I don't know what anybody else is doing or interest. I am going to be in the Illinois Valley at 12:30 that Saturday, January 28th, for a safety panel. And so...
Well, let's talk about the calendar this afternoon.
Sounds good. I just wanted to put those both a bug in your ear.
And we need to have that added to the admin calendar as something we discuss. I think it would be fine to do it under board business, discuss our calendars. We just don't have time today.
Yep.
So.
And I'm okay for it to be the general discussion. I just wanted you guys to be prepared that that's going to come up.
Perfect. Sounds great. Okay. Anything else? All right. Well, we'll see you this afternoon. I'm misunderstood. This Watson is Mike Watson. That is not our property manager to talk about Civil Air Patrol, and I really don't know what it is about. But we'll find out. Stay tuned. 2 o'clock.
That, on these, when they have a last name, I haven't seen a county org chart to know who all the employees are, so those names mean nothing to me yet. Right. Is there someplace I can look that tells me who those people are?
I think there's an org chart that JJ can send out. We'll
okay.
Have him do
there
that.
Should be one in the orientation area.
Okay. Yeah. I'll look.
And
I haven't quite got through that yet.
I gave you guys a copy of like an internal for staff that you should be aware of that you may interact with it. You know, names and pictures and stuff. I'm asking for that for a couple of years, and now we finally have it. So that'd be really helpful. When you're here after hours. Okay, well, nothing else. The board is adjourned at 10:57, and we'll reconvene at 2 o'clock today for a general discussion. Thanks.